to get on with our day. So thank you very much for listening in to Holla CBTU Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th at the Dismantle Change Build Center in Portland. Alex Vitale, director of the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project, is the author of The End of Policing. He'll be speaking on how to reconstruct police culture and behavior and describe alternatives that remove the police from dealing with drug addiction, houselessness, sex work, mental health crises, and more. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th, 6 p.m. at the Dismantle Change Build Center, 14 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening and welcome to KBOO Community Radio. My name is Emma Lugo and we are here tonight on Prison Pipeline. Tonight our guest is going to be Shalene Shabhak. Shalene is an attorney and she has represented Adrie Edmo. Adrie Edmo is a prisoner incarcerated in the Idaho Department of Corrections who has been seeking gender-affirming surgery. She is transgender and we're going to be talking with Shalene about Adrie's case and find out a little bit more about a recent victory in the Ninth Circuit Court. So, Shalene, are you there? Not yet? Okay. So, okay, so while we're waiting for Shalene, we'll just talk a little bit about what's going on with Adrie Edmo's case. Adrie Edmo is an inmate from the state of Idaho who tried to harm herself twice while she was in prison. And she suffers from gender dysphoria. And as a result of her gender dysphoria, she has filed a lawsuit in 2017 with the Idaho Department of Corrections seeking gender-affirming surgery. The Idaho Department of Corrections refused to cover the surgery, saying that it was medically unnecessary and that she did not have a right to pursue this surgery. Adrie Edmo said that she is a woman and she refused to be housed in a men's prison and she has gender dysphoria and she deserved medically appropriate treatment, which would be no different from someone who had cancer or a broken leg, you know, just someone who was seeking medically appropriate treatment for her condition. And the Idaho Department of Correction denied her request for nearly 5 years, despite a clear and urgent need for it. The Ninth Circuit Court recently ruled in favor of Adrie, and they said that it was due to the gravity of the facts in her case. Her case attracted national attention because the governor of Idaho personally spoke out against the case and said that he would appeal if there was a victory for this inmate. And he made this a kind of a cause célèbre. So I believe we do have Shalene on the phone now. So hello, Shalene, are you there? Not yet. Okay, she'll be here in just a minute. And so, anyways, Adrie's case received widespread national attention because, there are several complicating factors. One is that Adrie was a person of Native American heritage. And so there was a racial bias issue going on with respect to treatment of Native prisoners. But on the other hand, there was also, hello, Shalene, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great. Thank you. Welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. So we're talking tonight about the case of Adrie Edmo, and I would like to thank you for joining us on the air. First of all, can you please tell us a little bit about the background of Adrie Edmo?
Sure. So Adrie is a Native American transgender woman who's from Idaho, and she identifies as female, although she was assigned male sex at birth. And Adrie's been in the custody of the Idaho Department of Correction, which I'll probably refer to as IDOC, since 2012. And she was first diagnosed with gender dysphoria while she was in prison.
So let's talk a little bit about Adrie's background, because I've done a lot of research and I listened to that NPR piece and I've done lots of reading too. Adrie had a background which included a history of trauma. Is that correct?
Yeah, she had a difficult childhood.
And also was like moved around between different like foster homes, and she had a challenging childhood. Is that correct?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, thank you. Because I know, as we get into the conversation, I'm going to just bring up the fact that I know one of the reasons that there was so much backlash against Adrie's requests was specifically because of what she's convicted of and why she's in prison. So we'll get to that in a minute, though. When did Adrie Edmo begin to seek treatment for her gender dysphoria, and what was the response from the Idaho Department of Corrections?
So Adrie first began requesting gender confirmation surgery in 2014, and she has been repeatedly denied surgery since then. So that's for about 5 years now. The Department of Correction and its for-profit medical provider, Corizon, have refused to provide her with critical medically necessary care.
And is this analogous to any other like medical request that an inmate might have, like if they had a broken leg or if they had, were requesting treatment for cancer or depression?
Exactly. So what's important in this case is that, you know, Adrie's been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. There is no dispute. The defendants agree. All of the experts in this case have agreed. And the evidence here shows that the treatment, the surgery here, is medically necessary and has been withheld. And as you mentioned, so here, surgery is medically necessary in some, not all, gender dysphoria cases. Just like insulin might be medically necessary for a diabetic, or removing a tumor might be medically necessary for someone who has cancer. And actually, the American Medical Association and every major medical organization agree that gender confirmation surgery is medically necessary care, can be, for gender dysphoria.
Now, one of the issues in this case that brought it to national attention was that the governor of Idaho actually became personally involved in this case. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So, as you mentioned, the governor of Idaho, Governor Little, has made a promise that he will take this to the Supreme Court. And, you know, some of his public statements have referred to Ms. Edmo's crime when talking about how taxpayers should not have to pay for this sort of surgery. And, you know, it's a little troubling because no prison system provides different care to people depending on what their sentence is for or what they're incarcerated for. And the Eighth Amendment recognizes that in prison, everybody has the right to medically necessary care. And that's in part because they have no other options. You know, their food, their water, their medication, everything must be provided to them.
And the governor has brought up the issue of the cost of the surgery. That's one of the things that the governor seems to be obsessed with, is this idea of the cost. Is this a costly procedure, or is this similar to any other medical procedure in terms of its cost?
Well, what's interesting about what he's saying is, so he's making the statement that the surgery will be an additional cost beyond what the state already pays to contract medical care with the private corporation, Corizon. But when they contract with Corizon to provide medical treatment, the IDOC pays a set price. And that price doesn't typically decrease or increase based on medical services. So under the terms of the contract, the total cost that they would pay to the medical provider for services should not change regardless of whether she receives the surgery or not.
Right. So the cost of the treatment is actually wrapped up in the overall insurance rider that the state pays. In the same way that when a private individual pays health insurance, the cost of the procedure that they're getting covered is wrapped up within the restraints of that policy. And this particular insurance rider does include gender-affirming surgery, I assume, for the state of Idaho.
Right.
That's great. Okay, so I'm sorry I didn't send you this question before we talked, but one of the things that I wanted to make sure to get to was part of the reason that this was considered medically necessary is because Adri did attempt to harm herself twice previously before this was even really brought to like a high level of visibility. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Sure. So Adri Edmo did attempt to castrate herself twice while in prison. And both times she attempted castration, she was unsuccessful, but she was also at the time receiving hormone treatment. And so what that shows is that while she was receiving some treatment, it wasn't enough to alleviate the severe gender dysphoria that she was experiencing.
Right. So what type of conditions is Adri Edmo detained under currently? Is she held in isolation? Is she in the general population? Does she currently serve her time in a men's prison?
She is housed in general population, and she is in a men's prison, and that is because the Department of Correction policy houses prisoners according to their genitalia.
And how is she treated in the prison? Is she respected? Is she harassed? Is she safe?
I think, that's a difficult question to answer. Prison is a very difficult environment, and she is a particularly vulnerable person within that environment, and it has been difficult for her.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues with transgender prisoners, especially at the federal level, but also in many state prisons, is that there is a tendency to simply put transgender prisoners in isolation. Because the prison system doesn't really know how to handle having a transgender prisoner. So it sounds like it's a positive thing that Adri is held in general population. Can you comment on that?
I think it would be best if she were in a women's facility.
Has she expressed a desire to be in a women's facility? And how do you think that she would be treated in a women's facility?
I don't want to, disclose things that are within the attorney.
Within attorney-client privilege. I understand. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
That's all right. Let's move on. What were some of the obstacles that Adri faced when bringing her case to the court system?
So, Adri is incarcerated, and she's suing the Department of Correction and its medical provider, the people who have control over every aspect of her life. So even bringing this lawsuit takes a lot of courage. And I'm not sure if you know this, but Adri actually initially filed the case on her own without a lawyer.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. And any case is difficult to bring without a lawyer, but even more so if you are incarcerated. But luckily, we learned about the case and came in as counsel.
So she filed the case herself, which I know that takes time when you're in prison. Do you know about how long it's been since she started to pursue legal action?
It's been a number of years.
So right now, she's currently serving a 3 to 10 year sentence. So it's been at least 5 years? You're not sure? Okay, that's
all
right.
I'm not sure when she filed her case.
That's all right. But once she was able to reach out to your firm, what were some of the obstacles that she faced? Can you walk us through the process? How did her case history go? Did she first go to, is there like a prison court that decides this sort of thing? And then it goes to, can you explain how that goes?
Sure. Well, we actually, our law firm, Hatzell Stormer, Rennick, and I, we're actually a civil rights firm based in Los Angeles. And this case is, as you know, in Idaho. So she was connected with some really phenomenal attorneys in Idaho, Ferguson Durham. And they reached out to the National Center for Lesbian Rights, which is in San Francisco, and then that firm, that nonprofit, reached out to us. So we have a team of, you know, really experienced, committed folks that are all helping Adri.
Okay. So I'm just trying to understand how the process works. Like, so did she file initially several years ago and then it was rejected and then it moved up the court system? How does that work?
Yeah, so she filed a case first by herself, and I think her first case was actually dismissed, and then she filed again, and the court can do what can actually appoint counsel. Can allow a prisoner who's filing a lawsuit alone if there seems to be some leg to that suit, and that's what happened.
So she was appointed a counsel, and the counsel was the ones that hooked you up with her, and with the National Center for Lesbian Rights.
Yes, and they're still on the case.
Mm-hmm. So the recent decision that brought this case into the news was that the Ninth Circuit Court ruled in Adri's favor. Is that correct?
That's true, and it's an 85-page opinion, pretty lengthy. I'm not sure if you read all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that decision makes clear that there are decades of Eighth Amendment precedent from the Supreme Court, and this case falls squarely within that. And it's a basic principle of our Constitution that the state must provide necessary medical treatment to the people that it incarcerates.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Ms. Edmo is transgender does not take this case outside of the Eighth Amendment protections.
So it's working specifically within the Eighth Amendment and within the rubric of medically necessary treatment for a prisoner.
Yes.
So what I'm wondering, one of the things I'm wondering is that, I mean, I know that there are other states where there are transgender people who are incarcerated who are seeking surgery. Will this aid them, or is this precedent that's being set by the Ninth Circuit only valid for Idaho?
Well, we hope that this decision will be helpful to other prisoners who are being denied medical care, because it does recognize that surgery is necessary for some people, just like other forms of medical care are necessary for others. But I think there's one important consideration, which is that the Eighth Amendment asks courts to look at the individual circumstances of each person's medical condition. So while we'd hope that prisoners will, you know, look to this decision for guidance, the results of each case will be dependent on their own medical situations. But in terms of, you know, beyond Idaho, we absolutely think this case has implications beyond Idaho. This case is a victory for the Constitution, for the people who believe in the values that it stands for and protects. And it makes clear that we must treat people in our prisons with decency and humanity, and we can't deny them medical care.
Another question I have, I don't know if I sent this one to you ahead of time, but I'm wondering, does this affect federal prisoners as well? Because state prisoners and federal prisoners are housed separately, and they have completely separate policies for the treatment of those prisoners. I would assume that this would also apply to federal prisoners, but I'm not sure. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, the Eighth Amendment applies to people in prisons.
Okay, right. So are you familiar with any cases that are currently at the federal level where prisoners such as Chelsea Manning, for instance, who was incarcerated and was seeking treatment, are you familiar with any cases where this may aid in a transgender person who's incarcerated at the federal level?
I'm not at the top of my head. Sorry.
Okay, that's cool. Thank you very much. What are the implications of this decision beyond Idaho? I guess we've already gotten to that. What is the future for Adri Edmo, and when is she eligible for parole? And what are some of her future plans?
So Adri is set to be released from prison in 2021, but because she needs medical care urgently, we're trying to do everything we can to get that for her while she's in prison. This really is a matter of life and death for her.
Okay. Do you have any idea what her future plans are once she's released?
She's first hoping to get the care that she needs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when she's released, she'll do the things most people do when they leave prison, you know, find a place to live,
mm-hmm.
get a job, get her life together.
Yeah, that's great. So, can you tell me a little bit about how this case, working on this case, has how it has affected you? Like, have you gotten to know issues of concern to the transgender community better? How do you see transgender people now after working so closely with Adri on this case?
You know, I think, as I've mentioned, this case is, even though it is about transgender rights, it is also within the bigger picture of prisoners' rights. And it's completely in step with what's happening around the country. There are several other courts, including in Missouri and Florida, that have ruled that transgender people cannot be denied this sort of care in prison. And the district court's order and now the Ninth Circuit's, you know, unanimous panel recognizes that. So healthcare providers have known for decades how to provide effective and life-saving medical care to transgender people. And it makes me so sad that prisons and jails continue to ignore that consensus. And because of that, they put patients' lives at risk and they waste taxpayer funds defending these sorts of lawsuits.
So Idaho's governor has said that he's going to appeal this to the Supreme Court. Are you going to follow through on this case all the way up to the Supreme Court?
Yes, we intend to fight for Adri's right to this treatment, absolutely.
Do you think that the Supreme Court will hear this case, or do you think that they will just let the ruling stay?
Well, as I mentioned, this case is in line with hundreds of other Eighth Amendment cases about medical care, and so I don't think they will take it. You know, after being told by a federal district court judge, unanimous panel of the Ninth Circuit, and in that 85-page opinion that this case is consistent with all of those numerous rulings, there is no carve out for particular kinds of medical conditions or for transgender people. So I don't think that the Supreme Court will take it.
Does the outcome of the that's very positive. Although I would not want to deny you an opportunity to argue a case in front of the Supreme Court, which I've heard is quite an honor. But I think it's better for this particular person if it's not brought to the Supreme Court. What about the issue of where Adri is housed in terms of right now she's in a men's prison? Do you know approximately how many transgender women, have you come across any statistics about how many transgender women are currently housed in men's prisons? And you probably don't know the answer to that. So let's move on to, do you know what the future is for Adri in terms of like her housing? Do you think that once she receives her surgery, if she receives it while she's still incarcerated, that she'll be moved to a women's prison? Has the Idaho Department of Corrections made any indications on that?
Well, if they follow their policy, which houses prisoners according to their genitalia, then they should move her to a women's prison.
Mm-hmm. But they, right, okay. So let's hope they do.
Yes.
What does this case provide as a case lesson for anyone who, Prison Pipeline is a show that's heard by people who are incarcerated and in prison, as well as people who are supporters and allies and want reform of the criminal justice system. What does this particular case teach us about how transgender women and transgender men can assert for their rights while they're incarcerated? What are some of the lessons that they can take from hearing about this case for self-advocacy and for asserting their rights?
That no one should be denied medically necessary care, and it is considered cruel and unusual punishment to deny treatment to someone who is in dire need of it.
And if they are in need of medically necessary care, what are some of the steps that they can take within their facilities or within the legal system to advocate for their rights?
I know that prisons have their internal grievance processes, and one, you know, great way of starting is by documenting.
So document.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime that there's, for instance, in Adri Edmo's case, she came to, she presented clear and visible evidence of her gender dysphoria and the steps that she had taken for herself to try to address this. And so, and she also documented where she was denied treatment. Is that correct?
Yeah, she submitted multiple requests for treatment for her condition, and they were denied.
So one thing to do for people who are incarcerated is to submit documentation if services are denied. That was an important part of building a case. So once you have that documentation in place, then how do you get representation in order to get your case heard and addressed by prison officials or by people who may be outside of prison, who may be advocates? What did Adri do to get that kind of attention? And what can people who are currently incarcerated do? Do you have any ideas?
Part of it is luck.
Luck.
There are amazing attorneys out there and so many folks who are willing to do this important work.
Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out how to make your issue visible. It may be through the prison chaplain. That's usually a safe person to go to. Or it may be through trying to learn about who in your community is a litigant who is willing to take on civil rights cases such as this. So those are two possibilities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Well, Shalene, I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us tonight. If people would like to learn more about Adri Edmo's case or about the Ninth Circuit Court ruling or about your law firm, do you have any suggestions for where they can look up information about any of those contact information for you or your law firm or to learn more about Adri's case?
Yes, our law firm website has information about the case. It's HadselStormer.com, HadselStormer.com. And then also the National Center for Lesbian Rights, our amazing co-counsel. They have, they also have an entire page about this case, about Adri. All of the decisions are posted there. And that's another way to get information about Ms. Edmo.
It sounds like it's really been an amazing experience for you. How long were you on this case for?
I've been on this case for over 2 years now.
And it's received a lot of publicity. Were you the chief litigant or part of a team?
We're part of a team.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for your work, Shalene. I really appreciate you taking time to speak with us tonight on Prison Pipeline. And thank you so much for advocating for people who are incarcerated.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. Prison Pipeline plays on KBOO Community Radio at 90.7 FM here in Portland. And I would just like to thank you very much for listening tonight. And I'd like to thank our engineer, whose name I've already forgotten. But thank you, lovely engineer. You're so amazing. And I will remember your name for next show. Again, you're listening to KBOO Community Radio, Prison Pipeline. And we will see you next week. Have a great night.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHire2019.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center. Vitale directs the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project. He wrote The End of Policing. He demonstrates that the great expansion of police authority has come to exacerbate the very problems they're supposed to solve. He discusses how to counter the warrior mentality and police reliance on force and weaponry, and describes actually operating successful alternatives. But he insists that no reform will substantially succeed unless this country deals with deeply entrenched inequalities and injustice. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Friday, October 11th at 6 p.m. at PSU Smith Center, 1825 Southwest Broadway. Imagine a world beyond policing. That's no impossible dream. More information can be found on KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.